with my friend and colleague, Professor Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution, a senior fellow, teaches law at NYU and the University of Chicago. And we're reviewing what the Wall Street Journal recommends is four possible defenses, perhaps one or others will be emphasized. Freedom of speech, one. My counselor told me, two, that would be John Eastman, who Richard tells me is extremely well informed of the Constitution. In this case, he looks to have stepped outside for a moment, but in any event, that will be argued in court. Number three, Richard, I come forward with that the President of the United States, empowered as he is as the chief executive, believes everything he's saying about the election being irregular, stolen, false, Joe Biden not being president. It goes on. There's many pieces of the rhetoric. Does the defense that the president believes it speak to the allegations?
Well, again, you have the same problem that you have with the opinion of counsel. If the president is absolutely convinced that he's right on everything, then he's going to be utterly immune from liability for whatever he does. And the question is not under these particular cases whether he thought that he was right or wrong. The question was whether or not he did steps which, when looked at from the eyes of a reasonable person, tried to overthrow the way in which this thing was done. And so if it turns out he is trying to basically rig the election, he says, I did it only because I won. If that's a defense, then anybody can do anything at any time. And so it's just much, much too broad to deal with this. And like all the other stuff, when it comes to sentencing, he may be able to take it into account that, oh, he really thought he was right. So he was only in a little bit of bad faith, not a lot of bad faith. The second point is, whenever you want to put this good faith defense forward, there's always the additional words that are going to be added. Whether or not the defense is reasonable and in good faith is the standard situation. And on the first half of this, he can't possibly survive because it's very clear from the indictment and from everything that everybody else told us everywhere he went that he was told countless times by multiple people that this is not going to fly. Henry Olson, a former student of mine as well, had a nice piece in the Washington Post in which he said, think of all the Republicans who told Trump that he should not be doing this and refused to go along with him. Well, if you know that there are many, many people in your own party who are telling you that you're utterly wrong, it becomes much harder to make the good faith defense. And you'd never be allowed to make it unless you could show that it was somewhat reasonable. And so as far as I'm concerned, this is going to be another loser. He can't possibly survive it.
The fourth defense, and this is raised in the Wall Street Journal in an op-ed page, I'm told, which is that the President of the United States is immune from prosecution for his opinions, his remarks, his conduct while he's in that office.
It's a dead loser. This is a defense that was raised by Rifkin and Casey and so forth. And again, what happens is, generally speaking, you have to give the formula a situation in which you get presidential immunity for actions that take place within the outer perimeter of what is plausible conduct. This is a statement that goes back to a case called Barr v. Mateo in 1959, which was put forward by the very learned Justice John Harlan. And the issue in that case is you had a huge dispute and somebody engages in various kinds of defamatory conduct, which essentially could be alleged to advance the interests of the office. But what you do this is you test this against a rule. Is this within the scope of your employment, which is a common law test, which asks the questions whether or not an errand servant can do actions which will hold his employer responsible. And there are basically two things that you're working about. One is you have to say, is this an end of the employer or is this a personal end? And there's nothing about the United States that's at stake here. It's what Donald Trump is trying to do, is to advance his own particular interest, his presidential nominee. This is not part of his official duties. This is part of his general kind of harangue. You could do this whether you're president or you're not president. So essentially what's happened is you don't have the right end. And then you start looking at the other side. Well, it turns out you don't got the right means either. Because what you're engaging in is various forms of illegal conduct, a conspiracy to overthrow the United States. And so I think that this defense is absolutely worthless. The cases for which it's extremely important is what the president does is he makes a decision in his official capacity, which says that I'm going to admit person A into a particular office and deny that to particular person B. And if you did not have the absolute defense, what would happen is the person who was disappointed would then sue the president for saying, you unlawfully deprived me of something which I should have had, then, oh, maybe that guy wins. And the first guy came back and said, you did it to me. And so what everybody understands is when you have these kinds of conflictual type situations, you have to give the president absolute immunity. Otherwise, the system can't work. In the same way, you have to give judges absolute immunity, because if the people who lose the particular case essentially can sue the president, can sue the judge for what has happened, there's no finality in judicial proceeding. There's something else, by the way, which you have to remember about judicial immunity. You give judges judicial immunity, what it means is they can't be sued by the litigant. But if they decide to take a bribe, the litigant may not be able to sue, but you could certainly disbar them so that there will be some kind of a punishment.
We have 30 seconds, 30 seconds, Richard.
You get punishment at the top of this thing. And here, Donald Trump is not going to say, I got absolute immunity from suit, but I'm subject to criminal punishment. He's going to be subject to criminal punishment. So in my view, in this case, it's 0-for-4 in terms of the way in which the things have gone. And I really think, in effect, that the important thing to understand is concentrate on the two wrongs and the rest of it will fall into place. It's the jawboning with coercion and it's the rigged election on the ballot which will doom Donald Trump in this case.
Professor Richard Epstein, a senior fellow of the Hoover Institution, commenting on what we know right now of four possible defenses and the counselors for the former president. I'm John Nash.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.